good. That's actually my favorite place.
Are you serious? Imagine, it's because you're on the spot.
I went to 200 level and it was different. In a federal school, we're just thrown into a classroom of 500 people. No special attention. Yeah. And I went from like a first class to like, I won't tell you the grade. It was bad. One thing that really helped me, and I keep telling people these days, especially people that are just starting out and they come to me for some guidance, one thing I keep telling them is you need to be curious. You need to ask a lot of questions. And you need to speak with people that are somewhat further along the line in terms of career progression and where they are.
Who are looking to transition to tech, because tech career is important to be very proactive, curious, ask questions. Don't just assume things, but ask questions and even put in the work. Because for you, yeah, what you just mentioned, you put in the work to start learning. You didn't know much about it, but you knew that this is what you wanted to do. And
when it comes to writing code, when it comes to getting stuff done, they are super smart. And the problem I see is most of them don't know how to put themselves out there, and which is what I call a personal brand. At the beginning of your career, starting out, yes, your technical skills are very important, but you also need to think about building a brand for yourself. It could be anything. Don't think anything is too small. Because what happens is people would face problems from time to time, and whatever you've put out there will be useful to them.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, to balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. All right, MK, it's good to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
Fine, I'm good. It's been so long since we spoke, right?
Yep, I think over 7-8 years now,
so
if not
years,
going
yeah.
to 10 years. Yeah.
Actually, yeah. So before we start this whole chat, would you like to introduce yourself to those watching and listening to us?
Yeah, sure. My name is MK, also Adeshola, which I'm mostly called by my colleagues. I've been working in data and ML for 7-8 years now. And prior to then, I studied engineering in school. So I studied electrical and electronics engineering. And I'm one of those people that finished school, didn't know what to do, and started asking questions. And I found myself doing data science, machine learning. And that's what I've been doing for the most part. I started out my career in Nigeria working for a company called Terragon. Stayed there for about 3.5-4 years thereabout. Then I moved to Canada and I joined Temple. Did another 3 years at Temple. And I recently started a new role, which we're going to talk about. Yeah, so I started a new role last month. So I'm actually exactly a month tomorrow. So
this is
perfect timing. Yeah.
So that's me. Timing. Cool. Good to meet you, MK, again on the show. We'll dive into, you know, some of our background gist. But before we start, I would like to ask you a fun question. It's just to put you on the spot, kind of. So, mention 6 countries that start with the letter N.
N?
Yep.
Of course, Nigeria has to be first.
So, you know, that one is... that one is...
That doesn't count?
No, it counts. It counts.
Oh, it counts? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. N, letter N. Why did you have to do N? Not A, not B.
Because you have free Nigeria. Nigeria is free for you.
So there's another African country called, I think it's pronounced Niger, but
Niger.
I don't know if it's Niger or something. There is, oh my God, why am I struggling to remember countries with N? You know what's funny? I've been trying to remember, and Niagara keeps coming to my head. Niagara is this place in Canada where...
Okay, like Niagara Falls or something.
Yeah, Niagara Falls. Okay. So like, I'm going there this weekend, so that keeps coming to my head.
That's not a country.
Yeah, so not to digress. Let me think. Oh my God. Why did you put me on the spot?
I just have to. It's part help of the fun.
Help me out with one.
Norway.
Oh, Norway. Oh, my God.
Yeah, think about countries in Europe. Maybe.
Okay. Norway. We're trying to remember from the World Cup. Well, I think some of these countries never make it to the World Cup.
I can help you out also. There's one that is in Australia continent.
Asia continent?
No, Australia.
New Zealand?
Yeah.
New Zealand. Yeah. New Zealand. Thank you for that. Country. Let me think about North America. There's nothing is coming to mind.
You mentioned Nigeria, Niger. What else did you mention?
New Zealand.
Norway. There's Namibia.
Oh my God. That's actually my favorite place.
Are you serious? Imagine, it's because you're on the spot. There's Netherlands.
Yeah. Okay.
That was
you got
six,
me there.
Yeah. that was fun. Okay, so what you are a machine learning engineer. So what does it mean to be a machine learning engineer?
I think I'll simplify this as much as possible. For me, it's just about taking what's data scientists or people that do statistics, take all of that knowledge, which usually reside in something we call Jupyter Notebooks, and you take all of that, you refine that, you write clean code, and you make sure it goes to production. So this is me going a bit technical. So in the space of data science, or AI in general, there's data science, there's machine learning, and there's everything in between, like the operations parts, and sometimes we need software developers as well. So data scientists are basically responsible for going on the notebooks, doing research. And the concept of a notebook is where, like, you have a lot of cells and you just basically play around, you do things. And what a machine learning person would now do is to take all of that pieces of information, the code that the data scientist writes, which is usually all over the place, and you take it to production. And machine learning is basically you doing all of this operation work and making sure that things are stable, there is scalability, there is redundancy checks, and all of those things you need to make sure that things run as they should. And the operations part is interchangeably used with machine learning, which is you want to have like a dashboard where you monitor latency, you make sure that things work as they should. That's basically it.
That sounds like very geeky.
Yeah, I think I went to... Yeah.
But I've always been curious, how exactly... I know there's AI and you kind of, overlap. So does AI and machine learning relate, or how are they different?
Yeah, you can see AI as the parent field, which is the umbrella of everything, right? Okay. So people can say they are doing AI and they are doing research, or they are looking at algorithms, optimizing compute, for example. And under the same umbrella, you have folks that are doing core machine learning work, which is everything I spoke about with productionalization. And under the same umbrella, you would also find data scientists. And these are people that take raw data, they refine it, they build models, and they try to make sure that those models are good enough or excellent to make inference or make predictions that you basically can take a human out of the loop. So an example is you want to predict stock prices, you want to predict what would happen tomorrow. And the popular one that everyone is jumping on right now is the large language models, where you put something in ChatGPT and it interacts with you as if you're speaking to another person. So all of that falls under the umbrella of artificial intelligence, and it really depends on where you find yourself and what you're trying to do.
So AI is the parent, the umbrella. That's machine learning is like a sub part of AI.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you remember when we were both in the investment banking training? I said I was going to ask you, what happened to it? What did you do in investment banking?
Oh my God. Okay, so let me give context for people that would watch this. So it's called Talent Mine, and it was just a bunch of folks from Bank of America
and all of these investment banks.
Yeah. And there were some of these guys that actually went. They were recruited from school and they went into some of those programs. Some of them were medical doctors. Some of them were like in a very different profession. They went into those programs. They became investment bankers. And they set up this program to help the bank recruit people that were in school. And that was where Shade and I met. And we became friends and we got closer. Yeah. And for me, the reason why I joined back there was because school wasn't working. So I did, for those that went to uni, like I studied engineering and I did diploma, and I was one of the smartest people in that diploma program. And that was because they paid special attention to us. There was a lot of rigor that went into teaching us and making sure that like we understood everything, more like we're being spoon-fed. And I went to 200 level and it was different. In a federal school, we're just thrown into a classroom of 500 people, no special attention. Yeah. And I went from like a first class to like, I won't tell you the grade. It was bad. So for me, it was like a void that I was trying to fill, because my identity then was strongly tied to my performance in school. Which was the wrong way to approach it. But as a young person, that was all I knew. I just wanted to be that guy that succeeded. I was doing well, first class boy and stuff like that. So the moment school wasn't working out, I started doing other things. So that was how Talent Mine became. That was how I applied for it, and that was where we met. And you know, it was good. Looking back now, I don't know about you. I think I didn't take it as seriously as I should, because I still had that engineering mindset and I really wanted to be an engineer. And when they started teaching me accounting, the stock markets, trading, I was like,
Nasdaq, S&P 500.
Yeah, I was like, nah, I don't want this for myself. So I didn't take it as seriously as I should, but I think some of the knowledge we got from that class, it was valuable. Yeah. When I see the stock markets, those charts, like I have a sense of what it means, and it was from that class I got that. But yeah, that was it.
For me, I think that was actually interesting. I didn't know that was the perspective you had, like for the Talent Mine program. For me, I think one of the reasons I joined was my brother actually he didn't go to Talent Mine, but he was one of the, I think during their April or summer, was this summer or spring internship, sometime in 2010, thereabouts or 12, he went to Goldman Sachs. So he actually was one of the few people that went to Goldman Sachs from Nigeria. So I think just seeing him do that also inspired me to want to, okay, my brother did this, I think I'll do that. And also seeing how much investment bankers could earn. I didn't know much about the web dev space, so that was the only thing that I could hold on to. Like, okay, this would give me a bright future if I ventured into it. So, I think it was a good experience. Nothing was lost. It also helps me understand the stock market more and just also feel like, you know, anytime I talk financial investment people, I still bring that knowledge, and you know.
Yeah. I think you made it to the interviews, right?
I made it to the interview, but that was when I then did not get selected to be one of the people. It was very painful at that time because I felt like I gave it all my, you know, everything. I was very serious with it, but it's It is what it is. Eventually, I think looking back, everything just worked out how it should. So
I completely agree with you. And similar to you as well, I didn't even make it to the interviews because the prerequisites for that was to be on that trading platform and trade every day and a couple of other things, and I didn't get that far because I was not really interested. And this ties back to what I did next. So when I dropped out of Talent Mine, then there was another void, and I needed to fill that void because school wasn't working, and I wanted to feel like I was accomplishing something or something was moving. And that was when I got into networking, and networking in the telecommunication space. So that was when I started doing CCNA, CCMP, and I almost got my CCI before I left school. I'll leave that for another day.
Interesting. Okay, networking. I knew you were also into like all those databases, networking and things, right? Okay, didn't just know it was after Talent Mine, but that's good to hear. So I think even before leaving, like, you had already known that, okay, I'm not going to practice electrical engineering, right?
Kind of.
Okay. did you know what you wanted to do, or it was just along the way you found yourself? Like, I know there's a process to, you know, you being a machine learning engineer, but at that point, did you have clarity about what you wanted to do?
No, trust me, I did not. But one thing that really helped me, and I keep telling people these days, especially people that are just starting out and they come to me for some guidance, one thing I keep telling them is you need to be curious. You need to ask a lot of questions, and you need to speak with people that are somewhat further along the line in terms of career progression and where they are. So after school for me, I didn't really know what I was going to do. In fact, I was pursuing the whole networking route. Like, I was trying to get opportunities there, and I didn't really get anything significant. But I saw that there was a decline in that space because folks that were in that field were not getting this sort of, they were not satisfied, let me put it that way. Because it was saturated and they were replaceable. So if you're not going to do the job, somebody else is going to do the job. So I saw all of these things, and the reason why I saw it was because I was asking questions. But if I'm to link this back to machine learning, what happened was there was this time after my youth service, I was lost. I was just taking a lot of online courses. I was doing front end, I was doing back end, I was learning R and Python, and I was always speaking with people. And there was this dude, his name is Zahir. He was one of the consultants in a company where I worked for about 6 months. And I'm like, I'm just finishing school. I don't know what next. I see you're doing good. What do you think would be relevant in 5 to 10 years? And this guy told me, go and look into data science. And that was it. He said, go and look into data science. I went online, did my research. I still didn't know anything, but one thing I saw that was in common for folks that were doing data science was Python. So even though I didn't know what it meant to be a data scientist or to get into the field, I started learning Python. And I made one of those rookie mistakes as well, where when you're learning a new language, you just keep watching videos. You keep taking tutorials.
Tutorial hell.
And the problem with that is, you are going to understand those things while you're watching the videos. It makes sense to you. And the problem becomes when you are assigned a real life problem to solve, then you're like, how do I go about this? What is an if else statement?
I watched this video. I thought I understood it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was one of the early mistakes. But after speaking with that guy, I started learning Python, started applying for opportunities, and I got this opportunity at Terragon. And fun fact, I was not employed as a data scientist at Terragon. I was employed as a VAS representative, which is value added services. So my role was supposed to be that guy that will go to the telcos and ensure that there is a smooth business relationship between Terragon and the telcos like MTN, Glo, and the likes. That was what I was meant to do. And a month into the job, I went to the CTO and I told him that I don't like this. This is not what I want for myself. I see that there's a lot of data that we collect in-house, and I would like to be a data scientist. I know we do not have a team right now, but I'm happy to start a team. Put me on probation, try me, do anything, and let's see how it goes. And God bless his soul. His name is Ayodeji Palukon, in case he watches this video.
Shout out
to him. I was like, yeah, sure, let's... Yeah, shout out to him. And I was like, sure, let's do it. Let's do it. And I was transitioned from that role. And the reason why I really appreciate that moment is, imagine starting a company and recruiting somebody to do a specific thing, and the person tells you they don't want to do that thing. What that means is you need to fill out that position and move that person somewhere else. So apart from him giving me a shot, it was also an investment, because he was investing in me and also spending more money to find somebody that would do that job I wasn't going to do. So, and going by what I saw then, like basically what I just said now, which is the opportunity plus that gap that was left by me leaving that role, I just knew I had to sit up. So I was hustling, I was learning Python and doing stuff. And you know, after 3 months, I had to do a demo to the team on the things I accomplished. And yeah, that was it. I did a demo, they liked it. They're like, yeah, you got the job, you're going to remain in the data science team. And that was how I started the journey.
Wow, that is so good to hear. And you know, from the story you just narrated, your own personal experience, I could hear so many things, like being proactive, the time that you ask someone, like, okay, you notice that this, the whole networking thing isn't exactly going the way you would probably envision it. So like asking a question, what can I learn? So it's important that even when people are looking to transition to tech or start a tech career, it's important to be very proactive, curious, ask questions, don't just assume things, but ask questions and even put in the work. Because for you, what you just mentioned, you put in the work to start learning. You didn't know much about it, but you knew that this is what you wanted to do. And also taking a chance on yourself, because I know that it's not easy to just approach someone that employs you to say, okay, I don't want to do this. And then you go to him and you tell him that you're going to start the data science department, and that's just how your whole journey into data science starts. So it's very interesting to hear how you push through all of those phases.
Yeah, thank you. It was it was just one of those things, you need to keep pushing.
Yeah, definitely. And now you're one of the people that made the open source library, the Sleek Wrangler. So could you share more about what prompted you to work on it and really just build this open source library?
Okay, so backstory again. Before Sleek, I had this problem of doing stuff in the notebook. So for people that are doing data science, they understand what a notebook is. And the problem with notebooks is they are not optimized to go into production. And what that means is when you do all of that work, you build the most fantastic model, then the problem of how does this get in front of actual users, how does this make a difference, or what's the impact of all of this work? So I started taking courses online again, and it was basically courses that would help me with pure Python programming in regards to data science and stuff that would help me go to production, basically. So Sleek started from there, because when I started taking that course, there was a module, or there was a part of the course that spoke about modularization and packages specifically. So uploading your package to PyPy and making it usable for other people. So I'm like, okay, so if I can't think of any idea right now, then I can push it on PyPy and somebody else can use it. So that was where it started from. So that was number one. Number two was, I noticed we had a lot of repetitive steps. There's a library in Python for data scientists called Pandas. And Pandas is this library that abstract a lot of things for you. But I'm like, people want more abstraction. Meaning, if I want to, for example, rename a column, or if I want to do data cleaning, I probably need 5 pandas functions to do that. And I'm like, can I abstract this more? Instead of calling 5 functions within pandas, can I make it 1 or 2?
1, okay. Yeah, so that makes sense.
That was it. And what really pushed Slick, or what really gave life to Slick, was in most of the projects we did at Theragon, there was a lot of repetition and a need to automate some of those things. So one of the things Slick did was to take in a data set and give you a processed data set that can use to build a model. So we're like, how do we do this? And the reason why I'm saying we is because I had to collaborate with somebody else who was also on the team. His name is Wande. So we collaborated together, started thinking about that abstraction and making certain decisions. So if you, for example, for folks that are familiar with statistics and all of these things, or data cleaning, when you have a lot of missing values in a data set, what you want to do is, if it's a lot, you want to drop it. If it's not a lot, or if it's within a certain percentage that is acceptable, then you want to replace those missing values with something else. And when you do that, then you need to make a decision of, do you want to use the mean? Do you want to use the median? Do you want to use the mode? Basic statistics. But it goes beyond just filling missing values with mean. What if there's a skew? What if, like, somebody is 100 and the other people are 5-6? Then there's going to be a skew because the average value does not represent the majority at that point. So long story short, we knew a lot of these things, and we built a tool that could make some of these decisions for you by looking at the data sets. And it says, okay, if this is the distribution, this is the choice you should make. So that becomes the default value when you're calling a function. And if this is the distribution, you could do X, Y, Z. And we started to think on behalf of people and also leave room for flexibility where if I don't want to use this method, I can pass in something else. So we built Slick for about 6 months to 8 months thereabouts. And we pushed it out. We got a lot of positive reviews. We have about 5,000 downloads right now. And unfortunately, it's no longer in active development for so many reasons. One of which is I went back from a master's program at some point, so I didn't have time. My collaborator also had some things going on in his personal life, one of which was relocation. So we all had things going on and it's no longer in active development. But while we built Slick, it was fun. We were able to do a lot of nice things. And it helped us individually become better developers. Because for you to build anything open source, you need to think about documentation. You need to think about best practices. And we're forced to adopt some of those things. And that was it.
That's an interesting, progression from what made you build Slick up until now. And I'm not a data scientist, but yeah, I guess I can understand a couple of things from everything you explained. And just open source in general, I'm also involved in open source. I think there's a lot of requirements from you, like maintaining an open source project is not easy at all. Yeah. Lots of people come, you have issues, you have to, review PRs, and there's a lot of demand for open source maintenance. So I can definitely understand, like, a lot is going on outside of, the open source in your life. So can definitely understand you putting it, on hold for now. But is there any plan to probably pick it up sometime in the later future?
Maybe not, to be very honest. Maybe build a new open source package instead, as opposed to picking up Slick. And the reason is because there are a lot of similar tools like Slick out there, and we didn't build it because we wanted to compete with other people or whatever it is. We built it to solve a problem. And the question is the problem being solved right now? Yes, there are a lot of packages that can do something similar, if not better. And even on top of that, like, for folks that don't want to actually write code, you'll find a lot of tools that provide a UI, and all you have to do is drag and drop. So I feel like that's the ultimate win. And maybe if I was to take up Slick again, it would be to put a UI on top of it and make it usable for people that don't want to write code. And I believe that is presently out there. There's a couple of tools that will do that for you. So if there's a need to go back to open source to be probably to build something else, something along the LLM lines, which everyone is talking about right now, or maybe something else, but not Slick anymore.
Okay, that's fine. I'll be excited to see any other thing you build out there, you know, in the open source space. So, MK, you mentioned that you got a new role.
Yep.
About a month ago. So, congrats on your new role.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I would love to know, what was that journey like to getting this role? Like, how exactly was the interview process for people that want to know more about machine learning and just getting a job? What was that whole process like from applying to landing the job?
Yeah, so number one is you need to have a personal brand. I see a lot of smart people out there. Like, I work with a lot of developers, junior developers, people just starting out their careers. And one thing I see a lot is these people are very smart. When it comes to writing code, when it comes to getting stuff done, they are super smart. And the problem I see is most of them don't know how to put themselves out there, and which is what I call a personal brand. So for me, I was fortunate. Outside of working, I have a mentor, I have people I speak with, and I had all of this knowledge ahead of time. So for me, I was always doing something. If it is not Slick, I'll write an article. If it's not an article, I'll go for a conference. I went for a lot of PyCons. So there was always something I would do. And that really helps, because when I got my previous job, when I moved to Canada, it was one of those things, like I reached out to somebody on LinkedIn. The person looked at my profile, the person saw that I'd gone to PyCon, I'd done all of these things. And I didn't have to convince anybody, because that was already there. All they had to do was search my name and they see some of those things I've done. So it already gives you a leg in the room already when you have your technical skills in addition to all of these other things that matter. So back to the question, I got a job at TR, Thomson Reuters, and it was a recruiter reaching out to me on LinkedIn and responded. I had to do a technical interview or technical test, which was fine. Did that. And when I had the first interview with the manager, the person that I reported to initially, I had to change my manager. The thing that stood out for him was Slick.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So he goes, I introduce myself, I tell him all these things, and I'm like, at the end of my interviews, I would say, oh, outside of all of these things I've said, outside of my experiences at Theragon, at Temple, I also love open source. And apart from being a contributor, I've also created an open source tool myself called Slick. That's literally the line. And the guy picked up on that. He's like, what is Slick? And I told him about it. And he's like, oh, I'm going to check it out right now. He did. And I felt like I got the job at that moment, because there were like two other interviews after. Yeah, there were two other interviews after, and there was really nothing else to say. The moment I told him about Slick, he was just like, I want this guy. And the way I knew was, in my last interview, I was supposed to do a presentation to about four people about one of my recent projects that was very impactful. So that was a presentation. And I got to the presentation, I did my thing, and they started asking me questions, and this guy would jump in, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, Adi worked on, they call me Adi by the way, Adi worked on this, he built Slick, he did this, and he was
advocating. He became your advocate.
Yeah, exactly. So to sum it all up, like, at the beginning of your career, starting out, yes, your technical skills are very important, but you also need to think about building a brand for yourself. And the way to build a brand for yourself is the little things that you do not think matter. Those things matter. It's as basic as writing a blog post. It doesn't have to be long. It could be something you learned along the way, how to write a for loop. Write about it. It could be anything. Don't think anything is too small. Because what happens is people would face problems from time to time, and whatever you've put out there will be useful to them. So write something. Go for conferences. Don't just go for conferences. Connect to people. Make sure you have conversations. And don't be shy. We all claim to be shy people. I claim to be a shy person as well. But you need to, I say this thing, you need to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And what that basically means is you need to know that, okay, I'm a shy person. I typically wouldn't speak up. I typically wouldn't raise my hands. But I need to be comfortable knowing that it is uncomfortable to do. And when you're comfortable with yourself that way, then it's easier to get out of your shell and try. And the moment you try once, it gets better. You try the second time, the third, fourth, it just gets easier for you. So that's it.
Yeah, so good. I love what you said about personal branding. I think a lot of people just starting their career do not realize how powerful your personal brand can be. Like, it's good to know how to code, it's good to have those technical skills, but your personal branding is what will really stand you outside, you know, every other person, because other people know how to code just like you, right? But what is the extra thing that you're doing that other people aren't doing? That's where your personal brand comes in, whether it's writing articles, like you said. I remember even when I was in my boot camp, I was writing articles on my experience there, writing articles on how to, you know, do some JavaScript stuff. And like 2 years ago, someone reached out to me also, sent me a cold email and was like, oh, he read my article on dev.to about my experience, you know, starting my web development journey, and he would love me to join their company, even though we didn't eventually work out, right? But that for me made me realize that, okay, Shadi, what you're doing is making sense. Like, don't just think that it's too small, right? People are watching, and at the point where everything is going to stack up, you wouldn't know, because, you know, it's all a progression. You write an article today, you know, you network the other day, post on LinkedIn, and at the end of the day, you don't know who's watching, that just seems very impressed and they want you to work on their team. So yeah, personal branding is very important. Okay, so what's the job market like for machine learning engineers, like in terms of the competitiveness? How competitive is it? Is it really competitive? Because I know that the web dev space is extremely competitive. So is it the same thing as a machine learning engineer?
I think it varies from location to location. So if I'm to speak about where I stay, which I'm a bit knowledgeable about, in North America specifically, there are a lot of opportunities. Is it competitive? Yes. Unfortunately, people are looking for fully cooked ML guys, MLEs. People don't want to really give a chance to the junior guys. So from that sense, if you're just starting out or you're a few years into your career, it might be a bit more difficult, but it's not impossible. If you've done all of these things we just spoke about, like, you equally qualify as a senior, to me, in my opinion. It's just that you don't have it as a title, or you don't have it written on your resume yet. So at the end of the day, the jobs are there, especially with LLMs right now. Things just went crazy. Like, companies knew about AI from long ago, but it was like an afterthought for many companies. And something I like to say is, as a developer, if you're supposed to build a product, you're supposed to build an application, the end result is the application. You can't say it, right? As a machine learning engineer, the end result, in my opinion, is usually a value add. And that value add is a differentiator. That's what makes companies competitive. Now, the good side is, when your value add is very significant, when it's very obvious, for example, in a recommendation engine where you're saying music that you love, then it makes a lot of sense. However, when the value add is something that is not so noticeable, like improvements in the UI, for example, maybe there's a model that improves the UI to arrange things based on order of priority for your user. It's not very noticeable, but it is a differentiator. And the problem with that is, we MLEs, or data scientists, we do all of this cool stuff. And in the past, it wasn't very much as appreciated as it is now, especially since LLMs became a thing. Now everyone wants to build a chatbot, everyone wants to build a language model. And that presents an opportunity. The opportunity it presents is, there's now a need for more MLEs out there. There's a need for more engineers that can build these things. So the opportunities are there. If you stand out, if you do all of these things we've spoken about, chances are somebody would reach out to you. there was a specific point in my life where, I'm not joking, I wake up to at least 4 or 5 LinkedIn messages from recruiters, and that's every day. And at some point, I'm like, nah, I need to have something I'm committed to. So that's a good thing. It's like they are the ones looking for you, not the other way around. So it's an interesting field for people that want to get in. I encourage you, and you're going to like it if you put in the work. If you do all of these things, you have a personal brand, you stay on top of it, and you're consistent. I think that's a very important thing.
Consistency, yeah. Okay, so for people that are just starting, they know about machine learning engineering, but they do not know like the fundamental concepts that they need to know. What are 3 to 5 core concepts that they need to know, at least right off the bat, just starting out as a machine learning engineer?
Yeah, so usually I'll give this response from a technical standpoint, but to be honest, it's your curiosity, it's your willingness to learn, and just making sure you stay on top of new technologies. And I'm saying these things based on you having a strong foundation of, you know, you already know how to write Python, you know how to play around with data. Now, when you know how to do these 2 things, which I consider fundamentals, when somebody gives you a data set, your curiosity will lead you to ask questions like, why is the age of somebody 150? Do people live up to 150 years anymore? No. So why is it in the data set? Is this a data imputation error? Then you need to ask questions. Is this something else? You need to ask questions. And when you are mostly curious, then it will get you to the answers you need. The other thing is you also need to be very proactive with how you approach things. The way I tend to build, or the way I tend to work with data, is I always have the end in mind. So I will usually start with a prototype. And my prototype doesn't have to be perfect. It's as basic as, we have this tool called Streamlits. Put something on Streamlits that I can demo to the C-level guys, and they're like, oh, this makes sense. Not just the C-level guys, you need to have the product managers in the room, you need to have your designers, you need to have all the relevant stakeholders. You show them a demo of what things could look like, then people begin to help you. Like, oh, I can provide you this data set, I can provide you this design, I can do this. And when you now walk back from that, then you have a sense of how you want to build. And that's ultimately the differentiator as an engineer, because now you have the end in mind, you know what you want to build, and your curiosity led you there, and your proactiveness led you there as well.
So, MK, when you're now writing code or doing some machine learning stuff, what do you do for fun to cool off?
I love to travel. My God.
Okay.
Yeah, I travel a lot. And I recently found that I love adrenaline-inducing activities.
Okay. When so I say adrenaline-inducing, I love all those rides, those scary rides.
Yeah, skydiving, ziplining, upside down ziplining. I've done a lot of silly things. But when I'm not traveling, when I'm at home, I love to watch documentaries.
Okay.
With everything going on in the world, I love to ask questions like, if there's a war between 2 people, what led to that war? Why are they fighting? Because I don't want to just rely on what I see in the news or the media. So I try to get as much knowledge as possible, and documentaries help me with that.
Okay. Do you play games?
Oh, I used to love video games. I have a PS5 I've not turned on this year. I don't know if it's adulting or something, but it's
definitely not just adulting. But I still, funny enough, I still played the game yesterday night. I think I've just tried to incorporate gaming into my life. I try to play a game at least a couple of times every week. Yeah, it helps me cool off after so much stress during the day.
Yeah.
I play Mortal Kombat with Shenmue.
Oh.
Yeah, he beats me and I get angry, and then on it off.
You play MK with Shen. How does that sound?
Oh, so creative. Creative. But yeah, you should definitely, you should try playing game one of these days. It will help you to cool off after a busy day's work.
Yeah, I know we have like a lot of guys that play FIFA. They share their PSNs and people play online together. So yeah, I should do more of that. And hopefully you and I should play very soon.
No worries. Yeah, so where can people find you online? Just
I'm mostly active on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is the easiest place to reach me. That's
okay. I'll put your LinkedIn URL and in the video description. But it's been a beautiful conversation just hearing your story and hearing about how you've progressed on your journey to machine learning, knowing that what you study sometimes in school or your performance in school doesn't dictate what happens in the real world. You can still do so much good in the real world. So yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I think this was very important. You have so many people reaching out, they want to ask all these questions, and there's only so much you can give as just one person. So a video like this is nice. People can always reference it. And yeah, thank you. I was super happy when you told me about this.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks everyone for watching, and see you in another episode. Bye.